Pennsylvania's third largest state park is popular with people who sail boats and fish, and now it's famous. A new book tells its story, mostly through photographs. Moraine State Park is the title of the book and place. It's in Butler County, less than an hour north of Pittsburgh. The park was established in 1970, but author Polly Shaw says its history goes back much further. I joined her on a park bench overlooking the south shore of the park's Lake Arthur.
I came to Moraine State Park a lot as a kid, but as I was reading your book, I realized I really didn't know that much about it. So starting with its name, what does Moraine mean, and especially what does it mean here?
There was a glacier in the Pleistocene era. It receded 20,000 or 18,000 years ago. The moraine, which is the name of the park, refers to that edge of the glacier where it would finally drop all of the things it was carrying, rocks and seeds and various kinds of debris or till. That's the moraine. It's just north of the park. Because there had been north-flowing streams, the water had been impounded by the glacier and had backed up and formed lakes. When it drained, it left a flat basin.
But this wasn't exactly a pristine nature area in the early 1900s and leading up to the formation of the park. What did it look like then? What kinds of things were happening here?
Well, in 1906, the Western Allegheny Railroad extended, going right through the park. Of course, it wasn't a park then, and it also was not a lake. That's one thing many people don't realize. This is a man-made lake. At that time, the Western Allegheny Railroad took advantage of the flat land. Much easier laying railroad track on a flat land, but it also gave access to the many, many coal mines, and when it continued on west to Newcastle, it accessed limestone. So they were able to transport limestone and coal to the steel mills. We also had some farming. However, part of the land, especially the eastern end, was tending to be swampy. So there was a lot of swampy land. There were the railroad tracks, which were actually removed after the railroad closed in 1939. And there were also oil wells, 422 wells, which later had to be plugged. Now, there were no laws requiring that if you were closed a coal mine, you have to seal it. They just walked away. So the land was scarred. The land was polluted. The land was damaged in many ways. The land was ready to be repurposed.
So Dr. Frank Preston was the one who really dreamed up the idea of creating a park here. Briefly say, you know, who he was and how did he go about getting a park built?
Dr. Frank Preston was actually born in England, in Leicester. The glacier, the same glacial period, had affected his area. He knew about that concept. He went to college and he went into being a glass technologist. He was assigned to go to work with George Eastman, and then his employer in England assigned him to go to Butler to work with Frank Troutman at Standard Plate and Glass. Later, he then got his PhD and returned to Butler and decided to form his own company.
But he was also interested in nature.
Yes, his vocation was being a glass technologist, but his avocation was in botany, ornithology, and in geology. He only lived 10 miles away. And so he came out and he started to explore. And he established where the shoreline was on the ancient glacial lake. There was another man also doing exploration at this time. That was Edmund Watts Arthur. Edmund Watts Arthur was a lawyer, but he also was interested in botany and in birds and in astronomy and very much the outdoor man. But these two men did not meet until 1946. And when they did meet, I'm sure there was glory because they had such strong, similar interests and knowledge. And so together they were working out how these lakes emptied as the glacier receded. Sadly, this partnership was brought to an end in 1948. And Edwin Watts Arthur had been in his law office in downtown Pittsburgh, went out onto the sidewalk, dropped dead. Less than 2 weeks later, I've never read a statement that said there's a direct connection, but surely there must be. They'd been talking about recreating the lake. They had independently both thought that this could be done. So less than 2 weeks after Arthur died, Frank Preston calls people from Pittsburgh, some influential people, people from Carnegie Museum, people from University of Pittsburgh, and called them to Whippoorwill Hill, which is actually right across the water from where we are. He owned 300 acres. He had originally wanted to build a house there. And when he married in 1942 and showed the property to his wife, she said, no, not going to build a house here. She considered it to be too wild. With all that strip mining, all those oil wells, she considered it too rough. He invites his people up there and lays out this idea about recreating the lake. And yes, they decided, let's go for it.
And they had to go through a lot of obstacles, though, to get this to happen, right?
They needed an entity that could legally acquire land. They started with the GPPA, which is the Greater Pittsburgh Parks Association, and that morphed into the Western Pennsylvania Conservancy. That took 3 years. There were definite problems. Route 422, which literally used to come straight ahead of us there, it was only 10 years old. And it was going to be underwater. Would the state agree to flood a road only 10 years old? Well, they did. Part of it was that it was through a very foggy area. Not good on a major highway. They had to create the dam. Quite an undertaking. They had hoped to put it in the Muddy Creek Gorge, but that rock base was totally unsuitable because it's limestone. Limestone tends to make little caverns and crack, not what you want for the base of a dam. So they had to move it up and ended up with a dam with embankments going on 2,000 feet long. It's quite a substantial thing. The dam itself is 55 feet high. It ensures that the lake is 1,190 feet above sea level. Before they started to fill the lake, every structure had to be cleared. Every house, every barn, every silo.
They had to move people.
They had to move the people from the village of Isle. It's important to remember that there was great inconvenience and perhaps hardship on a lot of the people who lived here.
I love the photograph in the book. I think it's on page 41. It's a line of cars that seem to almost be floating on the lake. It's from the time period when the lake was being filled, and I think that was in 1969.
I have talked to a number of people who belong to families that made an event every weekend. Let's go watch the lake fill. They would drive out, and they would go on to Old 422, where it goes right into the water. And at first, they would drive through the water. And then as it became deeper, they would drive as far as they could, park on the old road, and then walk out and splash about. When I showed the current park manager these things, he's, not now! I don't know how we all got out of the 70s and the 60s, but somehow we managed it. There were people who thought, this lake will never fill. There are too many wells, there are too many mines, this lake's never going to fill. The engineers predicted 18 months. In fact, it only took 11.
From what I understand in your book, there's a description about how there's an old railroad right-of-way, which now, of course, leads into the lake, and that's actually helpful for fish habitat.
Yes. I am not personally an angler, but people who are anglers tell me that the fish like to be sheltered because the railroad right-of-way is slightly elevated. So that was another repurposing of the old right-of-way. More remarkably, we have the osprey. The osprey used to be a waterfowl bird in this area. They decided to reintroduce the osprey. The Marine Preservation Fund took on that particular project. They had to build nesting places for them, and they had to bring in these baby osprey, and they had to literally feed these birds by hand. They no longer have to be fed by hand by any means. They are independent. And in fact, they later repurposed that hatching area into the batitat, the B-A-T, the batitat. Personally, as someone who lives nearby, I thought that was delightful because I used to have a problem with bats in my attic. And when they opened that batitat, I don't know how the bats get the word, but it can hold up to 6,000 bats. We also have two pair, I believe, of bald eagles. And if you're out on the lake, you can see the nests.
Thank you so much for talking with me.
That's been my great pleasure. Thank you very much.
Polly Shaw is a retired elementary school teacher, a lifelong Butler County resident, and the author of Moraine State Park. She says she and her grandson have been on every trail there. There's a lot more at our website, including that old photo of cars appearing to float on Lake Arthur. That's at AlleghenyFront.org. This is the Allegheny Front. I'm Carol Holsapple.